Hello, you are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. This is Juno Afternoon. I am Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. We've got a great show. Andy and Hirsch and Sherry Patterson will be here to highlight Wednesday's celebration of the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech. We'll talk to Bill Pollack about Juno Brass and Winds. We'll talk with pianist Laura Downs about her upcoming concert with cellist Sue Bailey. That's September 1st. And we'll learn how to speak Chinese with guest Laurie Thompson. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Canada, an Aboriginal woman has become the top police officer in Saskatchewan. And as Dan Karpinchuk reports, she's making history with the job.
Brenda Butterworth Carr becomes the first Aboriginal woman in Canadian history to lead a Royal Canadian Mounted Police Division. She admits that being the new top officer is a bit surreal, but she's been the second in command for nearly the past year. Butterworth Carr is 45 years old. She's originally from a First Nation in the Yukon. She began working with the RCMP as a teenage summer student and was a detachment clerk. She began her career with the force as a Native Special Constable in 1987. Butterworth Carr takes over at a time when there are strains between the RCMP and some Native communities and when the force itself faces criticism.
I think as the different issues arise, then we deal with them individually, and it's really truly about relying on all the partnerships and the existing relationships that are currently in place.
Butterworth Carr takes over from Assistant Commissioner Russ Miristy. He was the first Native person to command an RCMP division when he took over the top job in Saskatchewan in 2010. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The Rosebud Sioux Tribe is set to receive more than $5 million from an insulin maker for diabetes care and prevention. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Novo Nordisk officials made the presentation to the South Dakota tribe on Friday. A company spokesman says Novo Nordisk will work with the tribe to combat the high diabetes rates across the reservation. Connie Brushbreaker with the Rosebud Sioux Tribe Diabetes Prevention Program says the increase in cases started when Native people weren't allowed to hunt and gather their own food after being placed on reservation.
And a lot of people still believe in that. We have some elders that still think, okay, the government put me here and the government's going to take care of me. And whether the government is issuing commodities that are real unhealthy versus trying to get some fresh food, it's really hard living on the reservation when we have so many families that are on fixed incomes. And to be able to eat healthy on a fixed income is nearly impossible.
Brushbreaker says the funds will go toward a wellness and education center for tribal members, along with a mobile clinic to help members in remote areas receive care. The millions are the first to go to a reservation from Novo Nordisk's Native American Health Initiative. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
Federal agencies are getting involved in a proposed iron ore mine in Wisconsin. As Mike Simonson reports, separate meetings were held last week with the mining company and tribes in the area.
Bad River Tribal Chairman Mike Wiggins says the United States Environmental Protection Agency is hitting the reset button on mining because of the controversies over the proposed 4.5-mile-long open-pit mine in the Pinocchio Range.
This meeting with the EPA was important and significant in the sense that it brought some of the regulators to the table, but at the same time, it wasn't the type of meeting where there's going to be direct formal action.
Wiggins says the tribes pushed the EPA to protect the environment.
What about protection and preservation rather than always talking restoration and reclamation? I mean, protection and preservation recognizes in real time things like what an unbelievable resource and gem the Bad River watershed is versus the premise on restoration and reclamation is destruction first.
Mining company Kogibik Taconite met with the EPA and Army Corps of Engineers as well. GTAC spokesman Bob Seitz says they want the feds to enter the fray.
We asked the EPA to become more involved in the process earlier. We think that the process could move much more smoothly if all of the regulators were involved from the earliest part. So we'd like to know everything that the EPA would like to have us test for, what information they want us to find.
An EPA spokeswoman wrote in an email that the meetings produced some good ideas to better coordinate the process. For National Native News, I'm Mike Simonson.
Today we remember Shakopee Mittauwakaton Community Chairman Stanley Crooks, who passed away in August 2012. Crooks was leader of the Minnesota tribe for more than 20 years. He was part of the tribe's successful gaming industry. Crooks was also a Navy veteran who served during the Cuban Missile Crisis. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello, you are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News, Juno. I'm Joan Pardis, your Monday host. Jeff Brown is the engineer and producer of the show. As far as the weather today, rest of today is cloudy, sprinkles. New word, usually showers or rain. Sprinkles is good. Highs around 60, east wind 10 miles per hour, shifting to the southeast late in the afternoon. Tonight, decreasing clouds. Tuesday, increasing clouds. Tuesday night, cloudy. And then it looks cloudy and slight chance of rain for the rest of the week. So here in the studio, we have Andy Hirsch from the Juneau Public Library and Sherry Patterson from the Black Awareness Association to talk about an upcoming event this Wednesday, August 28th at 5 p.m. at the Douglas Library. It is a celebration called I Have a Dream 50 Years Later, commemorating Dr. Martin Luther King's landmark speech, I Have a Dream. And this is a national event. We're going to hear about what's happening here in Juneau. Hello, ladies. Thanks for coming in today.
Hello. Hi. Thank you so much for inviting us.
Yeah, so let's talk about this event. What is happening at 5 o'clock at the Douglas Library?
We are going to have a couple different speakers from the community. Sherry Patterson will be talking, Ernestine Hayes will be talking, and Dr. Amanda Sesko, both Ernestine and Amanda are from the University of Alaska, and everybody is going to be talking about the impact of the civil rights movement, where we can go from here, current forms of discrimination, and what we can basically do to kind of keep the legacy going. Additionally, we'll also watch Dr. King's original speech, and we're going to have a couple music performances by Lori Daniels and Mimi Herman. And there will also be art and food.
Wow, that sounds great. So that's 5 o'clock. And if people want more information about it, there looks to be a number here, 586-0442. That's Andy's number. And that's who Andy was just speaking. So, Sherry, let's talk about it. So I know that on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, there are celebrations here in Juneau.
Correct.
And then this is the 50th anniversary of his landmark speech.
Yes.
So how did you collaborate with the library? Is this the first time you're collaborating with the library?
Actually, it is the first time we've collaborated with the library. We've collaborated with other cultural groups in our community, but we're just delighted to get the call from the library saying that we want to do this, and can you guys come on board and, you know, assist us? And we're just, as I said, delighted to do that. It is, we knew it was coming up. We had not made the move in that direction yet to do an event, and so it was right on time. And two heads is always better than one. So we got together, we met. It's been a delight meeting and working with Andy.
Thank you.
And hopefully this is just the beginning of a wonderful relationship with the two groups.
Yes. Sounds great.
Yes.
And as president of the Black Awareness Association, what are your duties? I mean, or what is the goal of the association?
Our main goal is to keep our community aware that of our culture. And secondly, to assist our graduating high school students with scholarships. We give away scholarships every year as a result of our Black History Month Soul Food Dinner and donations that we received through the year.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
If people want to find out more information about the scholarship specifically, so they could say, oh, school's starting, but if you do this, this, and this, you might get a scholarship.
Right, yes.
Where can they go?
Well, they can look us up on Facebook, Black Awareness Association of Juneau. Like us. We would like that very much. or they can give us a shout out by email, junobaa@gmail.com. Or 907-957-0630.
Oh, that's great.
Yes.
That's great.
Yes.
And then I Have a Dream, 50 years later. Yes. So there's a DVD, and then you'll see the speech, and I bet it's been digitized and looks terrific because all of us have seen versions of it and have either seen it, heard it, read it. I mean, it's so much a part of America's culture right now.
Yes.
So that's
yes.
great that there's this celebration
this
of 50 years later.
Yes.
And 50 years later, of course, we have President Obama, which is really, that's also a landmark.
Part of that dream.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Too bad we had to wait 50 years, but it's still here. So that's good.
Yes.
So that's wonderful. And so let's talk a little bit about... So people are going to come, we're going to mill around, there'll be a little food, and then people will talk, and then you get to see the DVD. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming this is a family-friendly event that bring the kids. And
absolutely.
It is, yes.
Okay.
Yes,
great.
Yes.
Great. So that, once again, that's this Wednesday at 5 o'clock at the Douglas Library. It's the I Have a Dream 50 Years Later. It's a commemoration of the famous Dr. Martin Luther King speech. And come and join the party.
Yes. Yes, free of charge.
Okay, absolutely.
Yes, just come.
That sounds good. So we'll see you then.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a dream. My four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
Georgia boy in 1929. When black and white were separate, he dared to cross the line. He watched as others called him by the color of his skin, and he knew he'd have to change things from the way they'd always been. So he raised his voice, and this is what he said: we have to change the world, change the world, change the world with our hearts. I have a dream. In the name of civil rights, there were those who tried to stop him when they blamed him for the fight. But every time he went to jail, he managed to survive, 'cause Martin trusted righteousness to keep his dream alive. And when he raised his voice, this is what he said: what about my people? We have the right to stand tall. What about my people? It was an April night in Memphis when his life came to an end. Now millions speak the message of the man there. have to change the world, change the world, change the world with our hearts. We have to change the world, change the world, change the world with our hearts.
We have to change the world,
change the world, change the world with our hearts. Then we'll be living Mark's dream. He had a dream.
Hello, you are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. I'm Joan Pardis, your Monday host. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer. And that was Mr. Sprout with his song about I Have a Dream. And I just want to talk a little bit more about this event that's happening this Wednesday at 5 o'clock at the Douglas Library, along with local speakers and the DVD of the speech. We're also going to hear about growing up black in the South, invisibility as a form of discrimination, and much more. So the program's run by the Black Awareness Association of Juneau and sponsored by the Friends of the Juneau Public Library, and that's 5 o'clock this Wednesday. But right now we're going to move along to our next guest, which is Bill Pollack from Juneau Brass and Winds. He's the owner and operator of that shop. Hello, Bill.
Thanks for having me, Joan. It's a pleasure to be here to talk about my favorite subject.
Yeah, it's great to see you again. Bill rented a trumpet to my stepson, a cello to me, and I'm sure there's more in my future. So the Juneau Brass and Winds, it's sales, it's repair, it's rentals, it's a full-service music shop. Is
absolutely.
That correct?
It includes a lot of consignment, which are sales of instruments owned by other people. So we recondition those and make those available with a one-year warranty as if they're a brand-new instrument. So that has been a very popular program because people can get into an instrument without paying very much. It's fully depreciated. And you never know if Johnny's going to stay with the trumpet or if he wants to go to the cello or the flute or something else. So this gives him an opportunity to get into it without too much of a cash outlay.
Right. I'm living proof of what you just talked about.
Right.
And you said that your real passion is the repair.
It's that, you know,
you just love to repair instruments.
I was a geek when I was a kid. I would tear a radio apart and find out how it was put together. And put it back together. Sometimes it would work, sometimes it wouldn't. But I tear apart lawnmowers, I tear apart this and that, and my dad was an engineer, so I decided I wanted to become an engineer too. So in college I got into electronics and decided that was a little bit over my head. So after my sophomore year I got into business management. Came up here with the Coast Guard and decided I wanted to stay here, so started this business, and it was at the same time, I was working for the state of Alaska, but in the evenings, I started building a business that was half engineering and half business management. So I've been doing that now for a little over 34 years.
That's what you were saying.
Yeah.
Then 34 years of business, 10,000 repairs, 10,000 sales and rentals.
10,253, but who's counting?
Well, that's what happens when you start with 001 is on your sales receipt.
That's exactly right,
yeah.
It's easy to keep track of it.
Exactly. Well, the back to school is happening. You know, we're in our second week of school here. So how does that affect your business?
Well, it's the busiest time of the year. It's totally nuts because everyone decides they're going to bring their instruments in for repair a week before school starts. And, of course, that's about the time when I do my instrument petting zoo at each of the elementary schools that is interested in having me, which is most of them. And
Wait. Let's talk about your petting zoo.
Yeah,
so
okay.
Can you paint a picture of your petting zoo? You're not bringing in llamas, right?
No. next best thing, musical instruments. So kids like to try them out and say, hey, is this a trumpet for me, or is it going to be flute or clarinet or violin or something else? And
So the kids could actually put their hands on it, try to make some sound.
Every school is a little different. You know, we have that El Sistema program that started with Laurie Hagee out of Glacier Valley. Well, I still work out there and actually show up in the morning and teach the kids trumpet. But before we actually start the teaching, we let the kids decide which instruments they're going to try and or be best at. And so we give them an opportunity to try everything. Every school is a little different. Some like to have the saxophones and trombones. Others just stick with trumpet, flute and clarinet, the basics. But, of course, we repair everything, including miniature strings all the way up to full-size string basses, piccolos to tubas. And so it's pretty much a one-stop shop now for repairs and sales and consignment.
Okay, so you work with all the schools. You come in and you introduce the smaller kids to the world of music, to instruments of making music. And then you also work with the bands, I would imagine, at all the schools as well.
I keep about 250 instruments in stock at any given time and have access to a lot more. So we could probably outfit two orchestras and two bands without blinking an eye.
Wow.
And many of these are used, so they're not all new, but they're various various qualities, various, you know, intermediate and professional, as well as the school materials. This time of the year, however, we spend most of our efforts on making sure the kids get the instruments and the outfits that they want. That includes all the accessories, the cleaning gear, the books, music stands, all of that. So, yeah, it's a little hectic, and it doesn't even slow down until middle of October, which makes it tough because I'm also involved in the Juno City Band and the La Traviata, and which is the opera association here, and the Juno Symphony, and on the Juno Symphony Board conductor search committee. So, yeah, it's many hats. But the probably the most satisfying is working with young kids. I make it a point when a kid comes into the shop to get their instrument, I enjoy giving them the first lesson, whether it's on flute or violin. I start from scratch, and it makes for a lot better relationship with that instrument. We have a little saying that goes, if it's not in your face, it's in the case, and I explain why that is. It really keeps the damage down and has really minimized our efforts to repair new instruments over the years. So I really have a lot of fun with the kids. I think it's a lot more fun than when I was working for the state writing speeches for the governor and that sort of thing. So I thoroughly enjoy this.
So you're really saying that Junior shouldn't think his trombone is a pogo stick or something like that?
Or the violin happens to be, you know, a Zorro sword. I've actually repaired a lot of violin sticks that succumb to the Zorro trick, or maybe two at a time. You know how that works.
Right, I do. So along with it being your busiest season, I noticed on your website that you are having a clearance price on all your remaining intermediate and pro instruments. Let's talk a little bit about that. You're having a sale of everything is 40 to 70% off of certain instruments.
Well, you know how the internet is. I could either succumb to the internet and roll over and play dead and say, you know, I can't sell this stuff anymore. Or I could try to thrash it and, you know, discount everything and try to make a couple bucks off of it. But the fact is there are a lot of big box stores nationwide selling very good quality professional and intermediate instruments online. And I can compete with those, but there's no money to be made, and I can't pay my house taxes on the profits I make on intermediate and pro sales. So I will help kids upgrade from their student instruments to the pro stuff, but I won't stock it anymore because my retirement dollars, as it were, are limited, and I really can't stock things that are competed by, you know, big box stores on the internet. And they have every make and model imaginable on these big box stores on the internet. The trick is a lot of those stores don't have repair people, though, so you buy something and it's flawed, they end up bringing it to me for repair anyway. So, as I said, my first love is repair. And so I get an opportunity to see those instruments and work with them. I get a very good feel for the quality of the instruments out there, and so I can become a good consultant on what is good in intermediate and pro. But what we have in stock right now is really discounted to blow out, and so it's a great opportunity for students and professionals to look it over. It's all on my internet site. Everything we have left is photographed and on the new or consignment listing, which is at junobrass.com.
Okay, and you have a wide variety of instruments available
everything
in that area?
From top to bottom.
You have a cello?
I have many cellos.
Maybe it's time for me to revisit that. I don't know if I could even be called an intermediate or a pro. Well, I know I can't be a pro. Well, thank you for all that you do. It seems like everything that's happening in music in Juno kind of has some avenue back to you. And, of course, you know, the big box stores, they have their purpose, but it seems like for an instrument it would be great. We're lucky to have somebody like you in town?
Well, you know, Alaska Airlines and other transporters are my best customers because things, accidents happen. They fall off the baggage conveyor. They fall off the loading belt.
Ew.
When things are damaged, they come to me and they get fixed. I'm the only guy for 1,000 miles in probably any direction that does this sort of thing. So, I'll, like I said earlier, I'll probably be doing this till the day I drop. But the sales, perhaps not.
I have one more question.
Sure.
Do you tune pianos?
I do not.
Okay,
I do
not,
sell digital pianos, which don't need to be tuned, and they don't succumb to problems related to temperature and humidity differences. So I've strayed away from that. But there are people in town that do that quite successfully, but not me.
Okay. So if you're just joining us, this is Bill Pollack talking. Well, this is Joan Pardis talking, but I am talking with Bill Pollack of Juno Brass and Winds. And his shop is here out in the Mendenhall Valley, and he does repair, rental, and sales of a wide variety of instruments. Bill, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Hello, you are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. I'm Joan Pardis, your Monday host. So upcoming, what's coming up in Juno on September 1st is Juno Jazz and Classics is having a concert with Lara Downs, who is a pianist, and Zul Bailey, who's a cellist. And I have the opportunity to talk to Lara on the phone right now about the concert that is coming up next Sunday. Hey, Lara, are you on the phone?
I'm here.
Oh,
hi.
Great. Lara, I am so excited to get the opportunity to chat with you. I know on NPR they've talked about you as a unique blend of musicianship and showmanship, that you have a captivating presence both on and off stage, and we're so lucky to have you up in Juno in just a week to do excerpts from your Exile CD. Is that what you're, is that, because the concert is called Made in America, and I know it's your first time up to Juneau. You want to talk a little bit about what you're planning?
Absolutely. It's kind of a great blend of two different projects. My Exile Cafe album just came out this spring on the Strangline Sons label, and it's music that's written by composers in exile, you know, everyone from Chopin in the 1830s to composers who are writing today. But many of them ended up in the U.S. as a result of their exile. And then the other half of the program is some American music that I'm playing together with Zuhl by composers like Barber and Bernstein. So it's sort of two different looks at music, at American music, both sort of the sort that's made here by composers who are born on this soil, and the sort that has come to these shores and really changed, you know, the direction that art and music have taken in this country.
Right. And then you were saying, what I understand is some of those exiles that we're talking about are Rachmaninoff and Stravinsky and Kwanko.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what brought you to do something like this? What led you to the exile theme?
Yeah, you know, a few years ago, I was playing a lot of Chopin. It was the Chopin Bicentennial, 2011, and touring and playing Chopin everywhere. And I did one concert at the Polish Embassy in Washington, D.C., and had this wonderful opportunity to talk about Chopin's life with the Polish community. And in doing that, it just made me think more deeply about Chopin's life as a Polish exile. You know, he was exiled from Poland when he was very young and spent the rest of his life in Paris in deep mourning for having lost his homeland. And so, I don't know, just put a different kind of spin on my relationship with Chopin. And then I started thinking about all of the other composers who've had to leave the place of their birth because of, you know, events, global events, wars and revolutions. There were a lot of them in the 19th and 20th century. So that led me to Rachmaninoff, as you said, and Stravinsky, Prokofiev, Bartok, you know, so many of the greatest composers of that whole era were displaced. And it's been a really remarkable adventure to think about the effects that exile, an experience of that depth, has on the music that's produced by the person who's experiencing it.
Wow, that sounds fascinating. That must have been quite the journey, you know, the conduit coming in this way and then it turning into something probably bigger and not foreseen on your part, like most artistic adventures.
Exactly.
That sounds great. So, Laura, I want to talk a little bit about your background, and I hope I don't embarrass you since we're on the phone. I won't see you blushing. But you made your concert debut at Queen Elizabeth Hall in London. Then, since then, you've, played everywhere, Carnegie Hall, Kennedy Center, Lincoln Center, the American Academy in Rome, San Francisco performances, many places in Europe, many places in Canada. And I did a little research, it seems like you started at 5. Is that true?
Yeah, I did. First Catalyst since 5.
How does that work? How does that work to exhibit that kind of talent at 5? I mean, can you tell us a little bit about that?
All I can say, well, I'm a parent now. So the more that I think about it, the more sort of bizarre it seems, the less I understand it, actually. I think from the perspective of parenting, I think it's kind of extraordinary, I guess, both on the part of the child and on the part of the parents and the support system to introduce music in a good way at such a young age. I see lots of kids who are, you know, prodigies and who are being sort of put through paces, but I really, when I think back, my relationship with music has always been a really loving one. And I do have a very early memory of sitting in a music class. This would have been before I was 5. I was probably 3. It was one of those, you know, early music classes. And sitting by the teacher on the piano bench, and there was some little boy who was bored and he was making trouble. He was crawling around on the floor under the piano, and she was having to deal with him. And I just remember thinking, you know, I don't understand why he's not paying attention. This is so much fun. And I think it just went on from there. It's always been fun. And I've been just so fortunate to live this life immersed in music and letting music take me to so many different places and different adventures.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. And also, just like in the past decade, it seems your debut CD, Invitation to the Dance, was called Magical by NPR. Your second release, called American Ballads in 2001, was ranked by Amazon among the best recordings of American concert music ever made. Dream of Me in 2006 was praised for the exquisite sensitivity. And then it just goes on and on, and now you have this new CD, Exiles. And you could check this all out at Lara Downs, DOWNES.com. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming that you're coming up to Alaska because of your relationship with Zul. Like, Zul Bailey is a world-class cellist, but we Alaskans, Southeast Alaskans, have adopted him as an Alaskan because of the Sitka Music Festival and the Juno Jazz and Classics, and we like to adopt amazing, brilliant people anyway. But I'm assuming that you're coming up because of him. Is that true?
Yes, we're so excited. We're going into the studio at the end of September to record this album together. And, you know, ever since we met, we have a musical partnership that's just one of those very natural ones. Playing music together is really dependent on chemistry. And it's so great when you find a sort of, you know, musical soulmate. We first started working together, I want to say, in 2009. At his festival in El Paso, Texas, and actually one of the first pieces that we ever played together was the Barber Sonata, which is sort of the centerpiece both of our programs in Alaska for this tour and for the upcoming album. So we're both so happy to have the chance to play together intensely on this tour and then to record together. And, you know, of my many musical colleagues, I think Zul is just somebody whom I admire so deeply, both for his musicality and for his outlook on life and music. And I'm excited to come up to Alaska and experience it with him. I've been so aware over these last couple of years and how much he has taken you as his adopted home, and, you know, just via Facebook and phone conversations, he just loves his time up there so much, and I'm excited to experience it with him.
That's great. So, Lara, when you join us next week, where are you coming from? Where's your base?
Well, I'm based in California, in Northern California, near San Francisco, and I'm flying up to Juneau via Chicago, which is completely out of the way, but I have a date in Chicago the night before I come up there. So, yeah, it's going to be a sort of a long plane trip, and I've got a suitcase on my floor, and it's a really confused suitcase right now.
Well, since you're in Northern California, it shouldn't be too much of a shock. If you were Southern California, we would probably say, oh, bring your, you know, fur coat. But well, we're going to hope for some nice weather. So, Lara, thank you so much for taking your time today, the time to talk to us. If you're just joining, this is Lara Down. She's a virtuoso. You could check her out. Just Google her or search her. And she's got she will be in Juneau next Sunday, September 1st at the Jack. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that with Jesselyn from Juno Jazz and Classics, but first I'm going to let Lara go. Lara, thank you so much. And if you want to, Lara, if you want to listen to this later or anybody else, you could just go to KTOO News and it will be online this evening.
Great. Thank you so much. It was fun talking to you.
Thank you, Lara, for joining us.
Thanks.
So, Jesselyn, I have Jesselyn in the studio. She's here in Juno from the Juno Jazz and Classics.
Hello.
Hi, Jesselyn. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thank you.
I think she snuck in with a CD in the middle of my chat with Lara.
I did. Well, we wanted everyone to have the opportunity after talking with Lara and meeting her to hear some of her playing virtuosic, like you said.
Right. So the first part of the concert, from what I understand, is going to be Lara, and then it will be the two of them together.
Yes.
Zul Bailey and Lara Downs. And once again, this is world-class music happening in Oldenburg at the Jack.
World-class music in a world-class setting, as we like to say.
There we go. And so, are there tickets still available?
There are some tickets still available. The big news on the ticketing front is that thanks to the Jane and Tom Stewart Education Fund, we've just been able to offer $10 student tickets for K-12. So general admission tickets are $50 for the special fundraising benefit event for the 2014 festival. But again, thanks to the special education fund that we have, K-12 students' tickets are $10. So snap those up before they sell out.
That sounds great. Okay, I'll take one of East, yeah. But we'll talk about that after the show. So, Juno Jazz and Classics, Jesselyn, what's your role within this organization?
Oh, I am the administrator slash production manager, and I am blessed to work with Linda Rosenthal, who is our artistic slash executive director, and of course, one of the founders of Juno Jazz and Classics. We're entering our 28th season. This concert actually serves as our kickoff for our 28th season, so we've been around Juno bringing music to this world-class town for quite a while.
Right, and Linda was yet again another extremely talented musician that happens to call Juno home.
Extraordinary.
Really pretty,
yeah.
And put together this festival, so it's pretty amazing. So having artists like that come to Juno, okay? So how long have you been doing the job? A couple of years?
I'm about to celebrate my two-year anniversary, yes.
Okay. So, I went to, my daughter went to the Sitka Fine Arts Camp, and she was young last year, and she's young, so she didn't go by herself, is what I mean. She didn't go to the sleepover part. And then you have these world-class musicians in these very Alaskan settings.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think it's probably pretty interesting that you probably have to work with expectations and just that, you know, this is not,
sure.
You know, we really don't have a W Hotel or
uh-huh.
something along those lines.
There's definitely a lot of expectation management involved. And, you know, the flip side of that is also true, depending on a musician's interest. We've definitely been able to offer fishing trips, one of a kind, whale watching, one of a kind, you know, the blues musicians who get to play on our blues cruises, like, okay, we may need to manage some expectations about, you know, what kind of equipment we have available, but on the flip side, have you ever done this before? So we found that thanks to people's flexibility and, you know, generosity of spirit, we haven't had too hard of a time selling Juno.
I wouldn't think so, because, you know, it's
right?
Just I went on a cruise once with authors, and they were just like, you know, we never really had to compete with whales. This is kind of interesting. Can we just stop, because I want to watch this too, and then we'll come back.
right. It's just a surfeit of blessings and excitement. I remember on the blues cruise this year, the band was about to kick off, and everybody was applauding, and we had a whale breach right next to us. And we're like, who are we applauding for now?
Exactly.
So it's been great.
Okay. So, but what we're going to bring it back to right now is September 1st.
Yeah.
Zul Bailey, Lara Downs, world-class musicians coming to Juno through Juno Jazz and Classics.
Yes.
And what's the details? What time and how do people buy tickets?
Jazzandclassics.org. You can also swing by the usual suspects, the Jackbox office in either Hearthside Books locations, or give us a call at 463-3378, but jazzandclassics.org. If you're just at home right now in front of your computer or you get the urge at midnight, it's always there. So that is this coming Sunday, 7:30 p.m. at the Jack. There'll be a no-host bar and some light refreshments available. And like I said, those $10 student tickets. So bring the whole family and the family's friends and the pet lizard.
Leave the pet lizard at home unless it's very happy listening to music in your pocket. Jesselyn, thank you for joining us. And I'm assuming we're going to go listen to Lara Downs. And our next guest is Lori Thompson. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
support comes from Valley Medical Care, offering a team of physicians and nurse practitioners committed to healthy newborns, toddlers, teens, and adults in Southeast Alaska, and proud to support public radio.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm your Monday host, Joan Partis. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. And in the studio right now is Lori Thompson. And Lori is here to talk about upcoming Chinese classes for kids. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Joan. Thanks for having me here today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. So let's talk about these upcoming Chinese classes. Where and when are they?
The classes are in the valley at First Church of God, which is near the airport, not too far from there, on Kasian Drive. And the classes are on Tuesday mornings from 10 to 11:30. We started the classes last winter, and we had seven kids. We've got two teachers. I teach it along with my fellow teacher, Mei Shui, who a lot of people know in town. She's been teaching for about 20 years. She teaches both Chinese and piano. She's actually an excellent musician, and she's from China. She's from Shanghai, and she's lived in Juneau about 7 years. So the two of us teach the class.
Wow, that sounds great. And what is the age range that the class is available to?
Well, we use a curriculum called My First Chinese Words, and that curriculum is designed for 3 to 8-year-olds. In our first session, our oldest kids were 5, but we decided to open it up a little bit. We realized that the time is probably, you know, a little tricky, except for maybe kids who are homeschoolers. This would be an ideal program for homeschoolers, in part because there's online materials that kids could do at home as well. And so people could work with their kids at home with the online materials. It's a broad age range, but the way the class is run is just based on the way kids learn ordinary language. It's all about playing games, singing songs. We do a craft every week. We have snack time, and we eating is a great way to learn another language because you can talk about the food and kids make choices and they ask for more food and all the things that you say around, you know, a table while you're eating. It's a great venue for learning language. And so so each week we introduce new words and then we use them. And so it actually works for kids that are different language levels.
Okay, so you have two young children. Did they take this class last year?
Yes. Yes, I do have two kids.
And how did that go? I mean, do you feel like they're grasping the language? I mean, kids learn so easily.
They are learning the language, and I speak Chinese to them at home, which helps a little bit. But we had all different levels last time. We had a couple of 5-year-olds. One had been studying Chinese for 3 years. One had just recently come to the United States from China, and so she had been hearing it for the first 4 years of her life. Then we had my two kids who have heard it at home, and then we had two kids who had never had any Chinese before, and it all seemed to work. In fact, the kids who knew a little bit more, it kind of helped the other kids because they could hear other kids saying words that they didn't, you know, that they were just learning. So even though we had all these kids at different levels, I think it helps. It helps kids hear other kids speak a second language. There's kind of this phenomenon with children and language that I didn't realize until just the last few years, which is if an adult is speaking a language to them, a second language to them, they absorb it and they learn it, but they don't. They aren't likely to use it much unless they're with other kids. And that's one of the things that we're trying to do in the classroom, that a lot of kids have sort of passive, they'll be passively bilingual, but unless they're with other children, they don't use it actively. And so we're really trying to work on that in the class, that they use it in little role plays and games and things like that.
Sounds like fun. Yeah, I totally understand that. Like if you had a grandparent who spoke another language and they spoke it at home, that's great, but you wouldn't really go out and use it somewhere else. So if you have that venue for them, then they're actually actively partaking in it with their peers.
Right.
So that sounds great. So why learn Chinese? I know there's probably like lots of data out there about the benefits of learning a second language at a young age, But why specifically Chinese?
Well, when our first daughter was born, my husband really wanted her to be bilingual. He has a few friends who have raised their children bilingually, and he just thought it was a great thing, really good for kids. And Chinese is a language that I studied in college, and I spent some time in Taiwan, and so it just Chinese happens to be the language that I knew and could teach our kids, and my husband doesn't speak another language, so Chinese was just the language. If we're going to help our kids be bilingual, it was going to be Chinese. Of course, Chinese schools are popping up all over the country right now because of the increased interest in Chinese as a language that is spoken by so many people. China is becoming a growing global power, and so people are seeing that in 10 and 20 years, it's going to be a very useful language to know. But just in terms of learning a second language, previously people often thought that learning a second language slowed kids down. And sometimes I've heard a few comments to that effect even now, that they misunderstood and thought that it actually hampered kids. But now most people realize that, in fact, it's really good for children. And in fact, there's been tons of research showing that learning a second language helps kids tremendously. In school, they tend to be better. Kids who are bilingual tend to have better problem-solving skills. They're better at switching tasks. They're better at paying attention to things, and they can adjust to new environments more quickly. There's just all kinds of things that second language helps kids with in terms of building pathways inside their brain.
Yeah, I would think so. I would. All the data that I've ever heard of or read always has been in support of people learning early, learning a second language, and also learning early.
Right.
That there's a real benefit.
Right.
So before we get into the cost and what time, and well, we talked a little bit about the time, but when it needs. I'm just wondering, it seems like I know a handful of kids who would be really interested in learning Chinese. And I'm just wondering, do you think ever you'll do a class that's for 8 and older? Or right now you're really focusing on the age range of 3 to 8?
If people expressed an interest to us, we would really strongly consider it. May has taught all levels of Chinese, and from small children to adults, she'd be open to it, and I would be open to it. So if there were a lot of interest in it, we would we would take that into consideration.
Okay, but right now there is a class for 3 to 8 year olds. It starts September 17th and it goes through December 3rd, and it meets from 10 to 11:30. And there's a cost involved. There's the cost is $360 for the first child and $270 for the second child in the family. And for more information, Lori, where can they get more information?
They could. There's a couple things. People could email us at ChineseForJunoKids@gmail.com. That's Chinese, the numeral for JunoKids at gmail.com. Or they could also find us on Facebook. Our page is called Chinese for Juno Kids, and you can find us there. Or you can give me a call at 789-9291.
Okay.
And I'd be happy to talk to people about it.
That'd be great. We're going to have to go for a break pretty soon, but I do have one more question. So you learned Chinese in college. So I know this is completely subjective, but is Chinese a hard language to learn? Is it any harder than the Romance language?
You know, it's interesting because I think linguists say, oh, all languages are equally difficult. I've read that in a couple places, and I don't know if that's really true. It does seem to me like Romance languages are easier to learn. I think the tones are hard. I think every language has some hard parts and some parts that are easier. Like the tones are what make it hard for a lot of Westerners to learn Chinese. But it's interesting how much more limber a kid's ear is than an adult's. They seem to pick up the tones a lot more easily than we do.
Well, I think there's been all these studies of how kids learn that it's kind of like when, like, Peanuts, the teacher just says, wah, 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 but I think they're really, that, you know, in Peanuts, when you see the movie, the Charles Schultz movie. The teacher is just like, wah, wah, you know, it's just kind of like white noise. But I think kids really pick up the different tones of, you know, oh, this is fine, this is an emergency, this is, you know, that they really are tuned into not the words necessarily, but the whole intention behind the words.
Absolutely.
And so let's, I think we have a few minutes, let's talk about tones. Like, so what are the tones in speaking Chinese? You said the tones were difficult. So
we actually have tones too, but we use tones in our language for syntax. You know, like we end a word question with the tone rising. So in Chinese, it's different because there's basically four tones, and then there's kind of a fifth thing, which a word may not have any tone. So there's five ways that a word could be said. Like for instance, you could say ma 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 ma. And those are all different words, you know, like if you use the wrong tone, you could call your mother a horse, you know, and you don't want to do that. So the tone is actually built into the meaning of the word. And that's the tricky part for Americans. But it's interesting. And that's in part why it helps kids so much, because when they study another language, they see how people think differently. And it's learning language is incredibly insightful into the way people think.
That's exactly what I was thinking when I asked that question about the Romance languages. So we think, I'm saying, all right, I'm going to talk stereotypically, that Americans think that English people think that maybe those Romance languages are easier because they're similar.
Right.
And so they're used, you know, because when you said a rising, when you ask a question, we end a sentence on a rising tone. I grew up in New York. Everything ends in a rising tone. There's all this rhetorical,
right?
this context. But it looks like we need to wrap up. So these are Chinese classes for kids. It starts September 17th through December 3rd. If you want some information, Lori Thompson is our guest today. You could reach her through Facebook for Chinese for Juno Kids or at 789-9291. Thanks, Lori, for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Joan.
This is Joan Pardis. You have been listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. As far as weather, it is cloudy and there's chance of rain throughout the whole week, but doesn't look that. Rain is not really that imminent in this weather forecast. And as far as tomorrow, tune in Juno Afternoon at 3 o'clock with Martha Moore. Thanks for joining us today.
Hana sakase tori tobase.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ok Bay area, tune to K276AF 103.1.